It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 32nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks for listening. This week, Michael Alan Nelson comes back and talks with us about his new project, Outcast, which sounds like a really great fantasy adventure, and it's an ongoing comic, too, so you're going to really want to hear about that. Then I talk with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer about the New York Comic Con, the Batman Arkham City video game, and other things like news and previews. So, since we have a lot going on this time, let's get to it. I'm talking again with Michael Alan Nelson, who I had a couple of podcasts ago talking about Malignant Man. This time he's got a new project that he's working on. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Great. The last time we talked, you mentioned there was something in the works that you couldn't talk about. And I have a feeling that Outcast is what the project was.
Absolutely, yes.
Cool. Well, before we get to that, I want to say how much I enjoyed Malignant Man. We hadn't seen the last issue when I called you last time. And I really liked the conclusion of it. I still feel that Malignant Man could make a great horror movie. And I don't know, is there any hope of that coming? Any chance of that?
Well, that I don't know, because Malignant Man was James Wan's baby. It was his story. Mm-hmm. And so usually what happens is whenever someone has a story or an idea that's really cool, but a lot of times the person doesn't know much about writing comics, so they bring me on. So that's kind of what happened with Malignant Man. And so I was charged with crafting a story out of James's idea. So being that James is an incredible director, he obviously did the first Saw, and he also directed the brilliant Insidious. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an incredibly wonderful horror film. It's really, really good. So hopefully, because he has that kind of pull, there is the possibility that it could be made into a film someday. Whether or not, I don't know for sure. Hopefully. It'd be fun, but...
I thought you did a really good job of pulling that together and making it a very strong comic. I couldn't wait to get the fourth issue. Some places that I thought would have it did not, and they sold through it, so I had to drive around a little bit to get it. So it was worth the wait. I really went all over the place trying to get it, and I was so happy when I got it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm really glad to hear that. Thank you.
Any chance it's going to be in a trade?
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't know when it's going to be collected into a trade. From my understanding, the way Boom Studios works, once a story or a four-issue arc is wrapped up, it's usually anywhere between 4 to 6 months following the publication of the final issue that the series is collected into a trade. But everything is collected into trade format eventually, yes.
Good, good, because I really liked it. I want to have the trade so I can sit down and read the whole story all at once again. That was really a lot of fun.
Thank you.
So now you've got a new project in the works, and I understand it's called Outcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, Outcast is about a man by the name of Valen Brand, and he used to be king. And he used to be alive. Now he is no longer either. And it is the story of his quest to reclaim his soul and eventually his life and ultimately his kingdom back. Mm-hmm. So it's set in a fantasy world, and he's basically a big guy with a big sword who has basically the only things that he has in his possession is a massive sword and a grudge.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's on this quest to get back what was forcibly taken from him. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that's just been a lot of fun to write this series. I'm having so much fun with it. We're all really excited about it. We've been working on it for a long time. As you mentioned, mm-hmm. last time we had spoken, there was a project that I was working on that I wasn't allowed to talk about. This is that project.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time working on it, and we're really happy the way that it's shaped up and the way that it's moving forward. I'm so excited about it. I actually had a blog post today, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. where I was talking a bit about it and was saying pretty much that this is the story that I was born to write. It's just so up my wheelhouse. It's fantasy with elements of horror. I'm just really excited about telling the story. It's fantastic.
Very cool. Yeah, I've read your blog. I was curious. You talk a little bit about how this is a mixture of two of your favorite genres. It's a fantasy and a horror mixture. I mean, Malignant Man was obviously sci-fi and horror. This time, it's fantasy and horror. Is this idea been in your mind for a while, and you're finally getting to put it down on paper?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's been in my mind for a while. It's one of those things that I've been a fan of fantasy for a long time. In fact, I'm a writer because of a series that I read when I was 11 years old. There's a series of books called The Book of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had actually turned me on to these books when I was 11. And it's basically about these 12 swords of power.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go into the story itself. By the way, it's written by Fred Cyberhagen, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. So if you get a chance, go read it. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that really affected me, I'm 11 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I'm reading the series of books. And there are three books in the first main series called The Book of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
The first sentence in the first book and the last sentence of the last book are exactly the same, but because of everything that's happened through the series, they have a completely different meaning. And it impacted me on such a visceral level that when I finished reading that last sentence of that last book, I stood up and said to myself, I want to do this for a living. I want to be a writer. And that's what started that process for me as a creator. And as an artist, this is what I wanted to do. And ever since then, you know, I've been writing ever since I was a kid, and that solidified that desire in me. And then from then, I went on to play Dungeons & Dragons. I still play Dungeons & Dragons. And this sort of series, Outcast, taps into that creativity for me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I play, I don't know if you have your listeners game a lot, but for me, I DM. I'm the dungeon master, the game master.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun for me because I get to craft this story.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I play with are also excellent storytellers. So we're having this fantastic group storytelling element. And it becomes very epic and very character-oriented, which I just love.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, writing Outcast brings that element to a story that I've never had a chance to do before,
mm-hmm.
that fantastical element. And when I say fantasy, I know some readers get a bit skeptical when they hear that word. They think, oh, elves and dwarves. And some people may think, oh, that's wonderful. Some people may be like, yeah, not so much. But this is more of a tone of a Game of Thrones, Conan kind of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
There is some magic, but not a lot. But anyway, back to the idea of fantasy being that catalyst that started me on that career on that path to becoming a writer. This is what started me. It's what I've loved reading. It's what I've loved writing. And now I finally have a chance to tell a fantasy story, which I've never really had a chance to do before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason, again, why I'm really, really excited about it.
Very cool. Well, I'll tell you a quick Dungeons & Dragons story from me. I was in a college in which Dungeons & Dragons was sort of frowned upon, and the school paper wanted to know what it was like, and so they assigned me to go out and play it, and I played with a bunch of people. And I wrote this article for the paper, and the people who loved Dungeons & Dragons, the people who hated it, both thought it wasn't strong enough. And the interesting,
really?
Yeah, it was the funniest thing. And the interesting thing was, is I turned it in for a school assignment for a writing thing, and I got almost a perfect score on it, like a 99 out of it, because the guy who did the class said, you know, I really understand so much more about it. It's just really great that you got into that so much.
Well, you know, I think that's what it is, too. There's a lot of, especially in the 80s, when it started to come to the fore and become a social thing,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of misunderstanding about what it was, and there was a lot of fear about it, and obviously misplaced fear, and sometimes we fear the things that we don't understand.
Right.
And so, obviously, I'm pro D&D, which sounds kind of weird. Are there any people that are anti-D&D out there still? Possibly, but it's become such a, to me, it's group storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I play with are again, wonderful, creative people
mm-hmm.
who are also storytellers in their own right. So I have an opportunity to spend 5-6 hours of an evening with these people where we basically improvise
mm-hmm.
a story together, and it's fantastic.
I'm just curious, what's the longest you've spent playing Dungeons & Dragons at one time?
Oh my gosh, I've spent, I would say, maybe 18 hours. I remember when I was a kid in high school, there was one day when I had some friends of mine and I on the wrestling team.
Mm-hmm.
We're all on the wrestling team, and we were in our own little campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so excited about the game and about the campaign where it was going, we actually skipped wrestling practice one afternoon to go play D&D. But the problem was we couldn't go home because our parents assumed we were going to be a wrestling practice.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally all piled into my friend's pickup truck with the cap in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a small rural community in Indiana. So we parked in a cornfield, got in the back of the truck, and basically laid our game map out and just rolled dice in the back of the truck for 3 hours until we had to go home.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I get really excited about it. And what's nice is when you have other people that enjoy the game as much as you do,
mm-hmm.
it just makes it this great communal event.
Mm-hmm.
So and then again, you know, when I was younger, you know, we had the time to basically spend an entire weekend just doing nothing but playing Dungeons and Dragons. So we'd hole up in the den for 18 hours. And the first thing we'd do is wake up in the morning, we'd have breakfast and go into the room and we'd play for several hours. My mom or my dad would come downstairs and be like, you guys want some lunch? We're like, oh yeah, food. So we'd eat for an hour. Of course, we're sitting around the kitchen table, they're talking and still playing in essence mm-hmm. as they're eating. And then we go back to the game table and do it for another 10 hours. It was just so much fun. Yeah.
Wow. Well, one last D&D question. Have you ever done a live-action D&D game?
I never have. It's funny. Like, LARPing, for some reason, never... It just wasn't something that I ever thought I would get into. Mm-hmm. I actually have a couple of real swords, mm-hmm. and the idea of actually pretending to hit somebody with it frightens me, because I'm like... Mm-hmm. You can actually, even though the blade is dulled, mm-hmm. there's enough heft to the steel that you could seriously hurt somebody. So mm-hmm. that being said, though, I've never done live-action D&D role-playing, mm-hmm. but I have played some games like Werewolf or there's another name for it. I think it's sort of like Mafia or something like that, where you sort of like have a killer in the midst of a group. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out who it is, and you do that through role-playing. So I have done that, not to the extent of like just dressing up and going out into a field and throwing hacky sacks at each other, that kind of thing. But so it's like I love the game. I just haven't quite gotten to that part yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like, though, this was a great preparation for you as far as writing goes, because it developed in you, especially if you're like a dungeon master, the ability to lay out storylines and things like that ahead of time. So it sounds like this was good preparation for Outcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. And see, that's the thing that really excites me about this project is that it's going to be ongoing mm-hmm. in this fantasy world that I'm creating. And so I get to set the stage. I get to create, I get to do the world building, which is, as a dungeon master, that's part of the fun. Mm-hmm. And of course, the thing to keep in mind, and this is something that I've seen some people attempting to write fantasy where they struggle, is that they concentrate too much on the world building and not as much on the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so for me as a storyteller, it's difficult to sort of find that balance, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I've created this incredible world. There's this and there's this and there's that. Well, that's all fine and good, but that's not going to interest readers. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm excited about this, because we have an interesting character who's in an interesting situation. And I have a chance to develop the world mm-hmm. and have that world grow around him. Mm-hmm. and the other characters that he's involved with. But yeah, but DMing was actually a great primer to that idea of developing the long-form campaign, developing that long-form epic storyline. Mm-hmm. So it's it falls along the same line. So you're absolutely right in the fact that it was a great preparation for the series.
Mm-hmm. Well, what interests me is a lot of the stories I read by you, including like Dingo and Pale Horse and Enigma Cipher and Swordsmith Assassin are all very defined stories. And yet it sounds like Outcast is going to be something that can go on for quite a long time. Going into this, do you know where you want to get eventually, or is this sort of open-ended?
Well, I have ideas of moments that I want to hit. It's interesting. This is something that I just recently realized about my own approach to storytelling. Mm-hmm. I like writing moments. To me, I'll see a moment in my head, and I'll try to string these moments together. Mm-hmm. They may sound very similar to creating a plot or something like that, but it's a bit different. If I want to have this moment where I have a handful of characters looking at a map on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and another character comes up and just puts their hand on the map and turns the map 45 degrees, and then everybody goes, oh my gosh, like a light bulb turns on. I have no idea what that means or how to get there, but to me, in my mind, I see a cool moment there. Mm-hmm. So sometimes what I'll try to do is I'll try to find a way to make that moment work or a similar moment to that. Again, that's kind of like a roundabout way of saying that I try to find these cool moments, mm-hmm. and that's how I build the story. And so even though I don't have a specific idea of where, I do have an idea of where it's going ultimately, mm-hmm. there are moments that I have in mind that I want to get to. But this is the fun about writing an ongoing series, is as you write the series, as you develop individual stories, there are things that come out during the scripting process. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's fun to take those things that just happen spontaneously and weave those into the larger tapestry of the overall story. Mm-hmm. So even though I have these moments and these general ideas of where I'm headed, mm-hmm. I may never get there. I may never use those moments simply because other things may show up along the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I enjoy about your writing a lot is the fact that you have this balance between plot and character. Some people go too far on one end to character and all the people sit and talk all the time. And then some people go too far on plot and we don't care about the people. But I've always enjoyed your stories because I care about the characters, but I'm also fascinated with what's happening. So I imagine that kind of thing will be continuing on with Outcast as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do have to be honest, a lot of that has to do with my editors. I have wonderful editors that can actually go, you know what? These people have been talking for a bit too long. Can you trim this scene down a bit? Mm-hmm. But for me, I believe that a story is all about the characters. You have to care about the characters. You have to want to either sympathize or empathize with the characters. But the characters have to be doing something. Something has to be happening. Mm-hmm. Although people say that comics is a visual medium. Mm-hmm. And it is. Mm-hmm. But there's something unique about comics in the sense that, well, you know, television and film are visual mediums as well, but you can sit there and watch a television show of people talking and be enraptured in it. Mm-hmm. But for me, the excitement of writing comics and telling a story in this medium is the fact that I'm not limited by budget. I can do anything I want. Mm-hmm. And so you have this incredible breadth of creative possibilities at my fingertips. I want to take advantage of that. But the thing is, you could have the coolest explosions and cliffhangers and crazy action going on, but if you don't care about the characters, well, it's just pretty pictures and noise, which is fine. Mm-hmm. In and of itself, but it's not going to keep people engaged and keep them wanting to read more and more and more. Mm-hmm. It's all about the characters.
You just made me think of something in that this could feel like some sort of a fantasy video game. I mean, if somebody came to you and said, turn this story into a video game, would you be resistant to that or would you like that?
Oh, if anybody wants me to do anything with a video game, please. Absolutely. I would love to do that. And again, you're absolutely right. The thing about Outcast and the character Valen Brand is that he has this goal. He's trying to get his soul back. He's trying to get his life back. He's trying to get his kingdom back. Mm-hmm. But because he is now this abomination, he's outcast. He's wandering through this land that nobody wants him anymore because he is this horrible, horrible undead thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I think it'd make a great story. And I think, of course, it'd make a great video game. Mm-hmm. Most fantasy stories lend themselves nicely mm-hmm. to a video game. Mm-hmm. The idea that you could have sword and sorcery hack and slash video game and can apply this character to that sort of game world that you wanted. Mm-hmm. But again, if somebody came to me and said, hey, make this into a video game, I would have no problem with that at all.
I bet you'd want to write it, too. You wouldn't want somebody else to write it.
Oh, no, I would absolutely want to write. Of course. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's sort of like you have this character that you spend so much time developing and creating, and not just Valen. I mean, there are other characters as well. There's Jana. There's, you know, who is, well, I'm not going to say what she is, but you also have Cordovan, who's a drunk, and you have Chorus Null, who is basically the big bad of this whole world, this necromancer that took Valen's soul. So you have these characters, and you spend all this time developing and creating these characters and the stories and the personalities and the strengths and the weaknesses to have somebody just say, I'm going to take that and go off in another direction with it. Especially this early in the process, they feel like my children, so I'm definitely not ready to give any of them up yet.
Not ready for them to leave the home yet, I guess. Yeah. Now, this is coming out in December. The first issue I see is $1.
Yes.
Now, that's going to be attracting people. I think that a lot of people like to get those dollar comics because you get to jump on for a reasonably inexpensive comic and to see whether you're going to like it or not. Boom has been pretty successful with those. There's a lot of books, like Planet of the Apes comes to mind right away, where they've had dollar comics. I think number one and number five, if I'm not mistaken, were dollar comics. And I think that's a great way to get people in. Did Boom suggest that? Was that your idea? How did that come to pass?
No, that was definitely Boom's idea. One of the things about this is that we know that if we can get people reading it, they're going to love it and they're going to want to continue reading it. Mm-hmm. And we want to make it accessible. We want to give people a reason to pick it up. And we think that a first issue for $1 is just a brilliant idea. And that's all Boom's doing. They say, you know what? We believe in this product. We believe in this story. We believe in this project. It's just $1. Make the dollar investment. You're going to read it and you're going to love it. And the thing is, it's $1 for a full comic. Mm-hmm. A full 22-page comic with all kinds of story packed in. Mm-hmm. I cannot express enough how much work has gone into this series. We are putting our full weight behind it. We are that confident that you are going to love this series. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, we want to offer this first issue for $1 because we believe that once you read it, you're going to want to stick with it. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to join us and watch this character's journey mm-hmm. and want to follow us along with his story. And the Dollar Comic is the perfect way to entice people to take that first step with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I did get a chance to look at some of the covers and some of the art that I saw on there. And wow, I have to say the art is very impressive. It's really good to look at. I'm sure it's going to tell the story very well. It fits the fantasy genre to a T. I really love the covers that I saw. How many covers are you going to have on the first issue?
I want to say 4 or 5. I know we're doing a very special limited run with the Joe Jesko cover. Mm-hmm. They're actually going to be limited 1 to 200, and they're going to be CGC rated, I think, 9.8 or higher. Don't quote me on that, but it's something similar to that. Basically, we're going to have 200 copies mm-hmm. that are going to be in pristine condition and very limited run. In fact, I have to double check, but there's something special we're going to do with the extra copies that no one's ever going to see. So those covers are going to be very, very special and very collectible. But the other covers are just, it just looks so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. The design, Valen Stord, the design, it's just such a fantastic design. The characters look incredible. The art is going to be stunning. The art is going to be just stunning. I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about it.
Very cool. You mentioned Game of Thrones, and that's real popular right now. So this is a perfect way, because Game of Thrones only comes on for, 10, 13 weeks a year, and you've got the whole rest of the year to fill your fantasy needs. And it sounds like The Outcast is something that could help meet needs.
Yes, exactly. Months ago, when we were talking about Outcast and the kind of story that we wanted to tell, Game of Thrones kept coming up. What was it about Game of Thrones that we liked? And we liked obviously, George R. R. Martin's a fantastic storyteller and a fantastic writer. So we wanted to bring that level of quality to the story. And the idea that it was more than just a guy with a big sword walks into a bar and starts killing people. But the fact that he's a thinking character, I mean, he used to be a king. Mm-hmm. So there are political machinations at work. And so for us, we wanted to create a story that had all the action and all the swordplay that you could ever want, but have it coupled with clever political machinations. You know, we're talking about a man who was king. Mm-hmm. Now that he's no longer king, you have all these other people vying for his throne. Mm-hmm. So it creates this wonderful little world of all these mini conflicts going on. And he's trying to navigate through this war-torn land to reclaim his soul. And so it's just a lot of fun. And so, of course, the idea that Game of Thrones, I don't want to say acting as a template, but the idea that we like the adult tone of that story and of that series, and that's something that we wanted to emulate with this series. Again, we didn't want to simplify it and just be big guy with a big sword just killing things. That's fun to watch, fun to read for maybe an issue or two, but because this is an ongoing, we want to make sure that it's worthy of the effort that we're putting in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to it tremendously. Now, this is obviously going to keep you busy for a while, but I always have to ask, are there other projects you're working on as well besides Outcast, or is that going to keep you busy for a while?
This one's going to keep me busy for a while. There are a couple other things that are kind of in the works. I'm going to say it anyway. It's one of those things, you know, I can't talk about it, but I think that I can talk about it now, but there hasn't been any official announcement yet. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. We're going to be doing Hexed as a webcomic. So we're going to be bringing that back. Yes, I'm very excited about that.
Cool.
Yes, well, I'm very excited about that.
Well, blame me. I'm the one that forced you to say that stuff. So I got you all excited and you had to say it. So that's good. Well, all these things are great. So I haven't read a bad story by you yet. You do 28 Days Later, which is probably what you're best known for. And that story's continuing on. I mean, how's that going?
Well, we actually wrapped that up with issue 24. The 5th collected trade came out, and the 6th and final trade will come out, I want to say, at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I think that comes out in December as well. And that will actually wrap up that story. And that's a series that I'm very, very proud of. We set out to tell the full story that we wanted to, and we got to wrap up Selena's story in what we believed was a satisfying way. So, again, yes, that is definitely what I'm most known for. And I'm very, very proud of that series. And being that we're close to Halloween, if there are any readers out there that haven't read that yet, I highly recommend picking it up.
Good way to celebrate your Halloween by doing that. So, well, it's good to talk with you, Mike, as always. And I guess what we'll have to do is when Hexed comes out, we'll get to talk with you and see the reaction to the digital comics. I'd like to know about that.
Fantastic. I would love to as well.
Okay, good talking with you, Mike, as always. And we'll talk to you again sometime.
Okay, thank you, Wayne. Take care.
If you're looking for serious science fiction, well, we can't really help you. But if you're looking for science fiction with fun, join us at sfp-now.com.
If you absolutely insist on using erotic persuasion to achieve your devious ends, then so be it.
Time for another edition of News and Previews, and this one's going to have some extra stuff in there. We're going to be discussing Batman Arkham City with Ian Cullen, and we're going to be talking about New York Comic Con with Gianluca Glazer. Ian, you've been playing Batman Arkham City, so why don't you give us your impressions of the game?
I'm Batman.
Oh, you still are Batman. Okay. Well, what did you think of the game, Batman?
I'm just getting into the role.
Yeah, apparently.
Arkham City, what can I say? You know, we've been talking about this for months. I loaded the game up last night, finally. I had it on pre-order, and I picked it up yesterday afternoon, and I went to my sister's, and I spent a good few hours at my sister's. But as soon as I got home, and as soon as I'd done what I needed to do, I stuck it in the Xbox, and away I went. And story-wise, it's pretty good. Basically, Hugo Strange, they've opened up Arkham City, which is kind of like a separate from Gotham, and it's where they keep all the criminals and all the mad people from Arkham Asylum. Mm. And it's basically a city in its own right, within the confines of Gotham. Mm. And the storyline is Bruce Wayne's actually opposing it. He's at this rally to oppose it, and what happens is he winds up getting arrested and taken into Arkham City. Mm. And it starts off where he's been imprisoned, he's been tortured by Dr. Hugo Strange and this and that. And, you know, he's released out with the other prisoners. And I think they're releasing him with the idea of actually hunting him down and killing him. But, you know, he breaks out of his shackles, beats up the bad guys. And then he goes over to you as a player, as in you have to beat all the bad guys as Bruce Wayne. You have to scale to a high point to get Alfred to drop off your bat suit. Whatnot. And from there on in, you're teased with the mission of rescuing Catwoman from Two-Face, which I actually did quite successfully.
Good.
And from that point, Joker tries to kill Catwoman, and you save her life, and then you're tracking down the Joker. Mm-hmm. It's quite clever, actually, because there's a little bit on it where you have to click the top button on the control pad. I'm not sure what would be on the PC. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to sort of like scan infrared, and it allows you to track the trajectory of the bullet. Wow. So you follow the trajectory of the bullet using infrared. Cool. And the trouble was, I got as far as the Joker's mansion, you know, where his thing, and he wasn't where he was supposed to be, obviously. So I had to beat up a load of bad guys and save some hostages from there. And then from then, that point, you have to locate the source of the Joker's radio transmissions. So I got that far, and that was after about an hour and a half's worth of play. I'm right near the Joker's lair now, and there's about, I don't know, there's probably about a dozen or so armed guards outside. So it's very much like Arkham Asylum in so much as you use stealth, or you can use brute force where appropriate. But obviously where guns are concerned, you're going to opt for stealth. Mm-hmm. The voice acting's really good. Mm. The cool part I really liked is I got to play as Catwoman right at the beginning.
Okay.
Of the game. But the downside of it is you're playing as Catwoman, you're beating guys up, so you don't really have time to look at her cleavage.
Or can't you pause it at some point? If you have an appropriate place to pause, you can pause it.
No, because if you unpause it, you're just going to take a few blows needlessly. So you get to look at a cleavage for a little while, and afterwards, as soon as Two-Face puts a gun to her head. But, you know, I'll tell you what, she looks very realistic.
Well, you know, the thing about this game, to me, when I was out in San Diego and when I was up in New York recently, too, I saw the video. And I understand they filmed this by hooking up sensors to people and then imported those kinds of things into a computer. And that's why it looks so realistic. But this is the most realistic computer graphics I've ever seen, and I was very impressed. Now I have to wait for the PC to come, because I don't have the game consoles, and it's going to be the middle of November before I'll get it on my computer. But what I've seen just has bowled me over. So I was just wondering, what was your impression? Because you play Arkham Asylum, what's your impression of Arkham City? Are the graphics better, the same?
I think they're about the same. There's not really that much in it. But then again, the most realistic computer graphics I've ever seen was in a game that was actually released earlier this year. Let me just quickly go over to my pile. Mm-hmm. Noir, it's called.
Okay.
It's set in the 1940s, and it's basically a detective game where you have to solve several cases. You start off in a traffic, and you work your way up through to homicide and vice and all that. Mm. and that has more realistic graphics than Gotham Arkham, than Arkham City. The thing is, there's not a great deal in it, really.
In Arkham City?
Between Arkham City and Arkham Asylum, there's not a great deal in it. But in terms of realism, I say L.A. Noir is probably the best graphics I've ever seen, because I've got it right down to the facial expressions, right down to, you know, nervous twitches in the face when you're actually interrogating people, and, you know, either about a crack you can see a nervous twitch or whatever, you can sort of read the body language. The graphics are that good on L.A. Noir.
But if you like Asylum, you're more likely to like Arkham City as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think this is probably going to be the biggest selling game, one of the biggest selling games this year.
Okay. Because I haven't seen any figures. I read a lot of rave reviews of it online that people really, really, really liked it. So I guess Arkham City being what it was and Arkham Asylum being what it was, this looks like it's going to be another success for the company. So the interesting thing is I just put a story up, and of course we're recording this a little ahead of time. There's a story where somebody has gone through and picked out video indicating that there's going to be a sequel to this. And so I've put that up on the scifipulse.net website. If you go there, you'll be able to see it. It's got, I don't want to spoil some of the stuff. Now, again, I know a lot about the story because we've been reporting on it. But let's just say that there are things that happen that indicate that there's very likely to be another Arkham game.
When I picked it up from the shop yesterday, the guy at the counter was telling me that they're actually releasing a new add-on. It's going to be out through Xbox Live, and I should imagine it will come out for PlayStation Network as well. It's going to be about 500 Microsoft points on Xbox Live. And what it is they're releasing a mod where you can actually play as Nightwing. Hmm. I think that's Robin Nightwing, right?
Well, there's a Robin sequence, I remember, that you could get an add-on. I think it's at Best Buy you get that. You got Robin?
I've got the Robin. What I'm saying is I think Nightwing was the first Robin, right?
Dick Grayson was, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What you get is for 500 Microsoft points, you get Nightwing, but you also get Wayne Manor and the Batcave all in that mod.
Oh. Wow, very cool. So overall, your judgment of the game then, Ian, so far? I know you haven't gotten to the end yet, but what's your impression so far?
I'm really enjoying it. I just sort of like turned it off last night after about an hour and a half because I felt, right, enough play. I could have stayed on all night quite easily.
Wow.
I had other stuff to do, so I had to watch myself.
Okay, so thumbs up. Maybe what we'll do is when you get to the end of the game, we'll talk a little bit more about that, about what you thought after you got through with it.
Well, I never actually completed Arkham Asylum because I got to one bit in Arkham Asylum that I just couldn't do. Mm. I may as well have just been beating my own heading with a sledgehammer. But if that happens this time around, I'm just going to persevere and try and see it through.
Okay. There are websites that actually let people know how to get past certain areas, and maybe what we'll have to do is get to that and find one of those sites.
I don't like those sites.
Ah, okay. Well, never mind. Okay. Well, that Arkham City. Now, Gianluca, what's your impression of the game? I don't think you've gotten it yet. You're like me. I haven't gotten it yet. But what you've seen of it, what's your impression of the game?
No, I'm always really impressed with those kind of games. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoy it very much. Yeah, graphics have gone a long way since when I first started playing video games. Mm-hmm. You know, they use like a lot of good voice talent too. I believe Mark Hamill does the voice of the Joker.
Yep.
He's been doing that since the cartoon series in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely something. If I had like an Xbox 360, it would definitely be one of my first purchases.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Hamill sings over the end credits, and what he sings is an indication that there's another game coming. So I won't spoil that, but it's really interesting. But yeah, like you, when I saw the video, and I was the first time I saw it was in San Diego, and my jaw hit the ground. I just thought it was incredibly good, you know. And I liked Arkham City. I thought Arkham Asylum. I think this is better, but this is just my opinion of it.
I think basically it probably looks better. Arkham City probably looks better because it's all outdoors. Mm-hmm. You're not in the confines of the asylum. Whereas the asylum was mostly one tone. It was mostly up and down corridors or places. And you did go outside once, but only on the grounds of the asylum, whereas this, it's more of a cityscape. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we'll have to get updates, Ian. Every week we'll see what the Batman Arkham City update is until we get to the end of the game and see how that goes.
I don't have time.
Okay, well, we'll see how you're doing. We'll find out how far you've got. That's no rush to get through it. Okay, why don't we turn to New York Comic Con? Gianluca, you and I were both there, and we bumped into each other again there. And why don't you go ahead and give your impressions of the Comic-Con? Because this is the first time I was to New York. Was this your first time that you were at the New York Comic-Con?
It's my second one. I went to the one 2 years ago back in the early 2009 before they moved it to October.
Mm-hmm.
So it is significantly bigger. You know, they had like 105,000 attendees this year's Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it was like probably in the 80,000 to 90,000 range. Mm-hmm. It definitely seems so much more crowded than before.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people, tons of stuff. You know, the Artist Alley area where I was at was like, because they're doing construction in the Jacob Javits Center, there's kind of like this big wall and these like tunnelways that take you from like the main show floor over to like the Artist Alley section. And there's Podcast Alley. So that was a lot less dense, that area. But those walkways in between, getting, you know, in between were like super packed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an interesting show. I had a good time. It's great seeing like guys like Wayne and other folks that you talk to a lot on the internet, but you don't get to see at shows, or maybe there are a lot of East Coast guys that don't go out to San Diego that you get to see out there as well.
Mm-hmm. I think all 105,000 of them were there on Saturday because, man, Saturday was – I could barely walk through the place.
It's insane. Unlike other conventions, it's a lot like San Diego, but with more emphasis on comics.
Mm-hmm. They did have other stuff. Now, the Podcast Alley, I never really got to. And being that we're involved with podcasts, I'm tempted to – I don't know whether I want to be in that thing or not. Did you get to go to Podcast Alley?
Yeah, it's not that big. It's like a row, not even a full-length row. And you have probably, say, 6 or 7 different podcast groups there. Some of these guys wait there and have talent come over there for interviews and such. A number of them, you know, like iFanboy, are just – it's just like a home base, basically. And they're mostly out and about, you know, trying to get interviews and stuff like that. And they'll have maybe one person there that, you know, that table may be empty for the most part during most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I fanboy though. They're there every year because I actually watch their podcast every now and again, and they're always at New York Comic Con. They seem to have it pretty well scoped out.
Newsarama has a booth overseeing, not overseeing the Artist Alley where you were, Jean-Luc, but in the other part where you go into the Artist Alley's to the left, and then you've got other, the quote-unquote bigger things like DC Comics and Marvel were in another section, and above that section was where Newsarama was. They were in some sort of a booth overlooking it all. And
it's like a skybox.
Yeah, that's what it was. My only concern that I had was when I first got there and tried to get my badge, they ran me from one side of the building to the other. One guy directed me. I started to go across the building. I got halfway across when another guy directed me back where I had come. I went back where I had come, and then I got to a guy, and I said, look, I said, where's the press? I said, no, everybody seems to be confused. And so I had to go again. This time, the guy went with me and sort of let the guy know that he had directed me in the wrong direction. And the terrible thing was he got away from me, and I hadn't gotten there yet, and so I still had to find it. So I had to run around the building some more, and I finally found it. And then when I got there, they didn't have my name on the list. But luckily, I had printed out the email that said that I had been given permission, and so they just gave me a badge, and I was happy. But the first time I saw you, I was drenched with sweat because I've been in this huge building. I've been running from side to side.
That.
So I felt really badly about it. So I took a little while and kind of sat down for a while and cooled down again. And then I got to meet like Sean Aldridge from Vic Boone, which was really cool. I got to meet the folks behind Monocyte, which I had just previewed in one of my columns on scifipulse.net. And they were very appreciative about that. I talked to the folks behind Sixth Gun, which was great. I got all over the place and went to D.C. and talked with some of the guys from D.C. Jeff Johns would happen to be there while I was at the booth, and he was signing, so I never got to talk to him, but it was great. It's like San Diego, but smaller. There wasn't nearly as much media as involved, although the folks from Haven were there. So there was just, again, there's a lot of costumes, and I was speaking with a guy from the local media, which that kind of interested me. He was focusing on the costumes, and there was a guy who had a Batmobile there, and he was very interested in how the costumes came to be and how things. So he interviewed me briefly, and he said if he used my stuff, he would let me know, but I haven't heard from him, so I don't imagine he used it. But he was very focused on the costumes and what it was that made people wear costumes to something like this. It's an interesting event. I like going to it, so I'm planning on going again next year.
Right.
But like I said, Saturday was wall-to-wall bodies. To get into the building, luckily I was pressed, so I sort of didn't have to go through the main line. But the main line was like weaving around several times outside before you actually got to go into the building. And I just looked at it, and I said, this is the New York Comic-Con exercise program, because everybody was running around. By the time they get inside, they'd be worn out. So it was amazing.
Yeah. Dude, next year, Wayne, is I'd make sure that they've got you down on that list as press. You know, I'd actually write them back and say, be sure to have me down on the list this time, because I don't want to be running around to find that I'm not on the list. And, you know, I might not have that email with me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm planning next year. I want to go to Pittsburgh, and I want to go to Baltimore. Of course, I always go to that one because it's local for me. I definitely want to go to San Diego, and I definitely want to go back to New York and Philly. Philly's one I didn't get to this year, but I'm going to get to next year. It's a great thing for me because I get to interact with people, and I get to find people. I used to blow copious amounts of money there, but that's not why I go anymore. I go to talk to people, and it's a great thing for me because of that. I'm glad I live in Washington, D.C., and not New York. It is chaos outside. When you're trying to get around, walk around on the streets outside, holy mackerel. That was something.
Yeah. It's a lot different than Los Angeles, too, in terms of the way cars treat pedestrians. Yeah. You know, it's insane. Especially because you have a lot of crazy cab drivers out there.
Yeah, you're an impediment in their way, and you had better darn get out of the way or else.
I wanted to mention, though, about New York Comic Con. Newsarama has had the skybox, I know, at least 2 years ago as well. But CBR as well was in a equal-sized skybox area along the same wall.
Oh.
Probably more towards the podcast alley area, though, overlooking like the booths that are there as well as the podcast area. Not too far away from where they were giving away a free car.
Oh, some artist was drawing on the side of a car, and I thought, man, well, all it needs to do is go out in the rain, and it'll wash all that stuff off, and it'll be the regular car again. But it was a good con. It was interesting. I got to meet several people I wanted to meet and talk with people, and so I enjoyed it a lot. So next year, I guess if things go well, you and I'll be back there, Jean-Luc, and maybe we can talk Ian into getting there.
Yes.
Well, you know, absolutely. So if a money tree sprouts up in the back garden, I'll go to every single con you ask me to go to, but that's unlikely to happen.
Okay.
Say, one thing I wanted to mention about the badges, though, is that they are not strict at all in regards to badges like they are at San Diego.
Oh, yeah. It's just a standard badge. The badge I had was just press. It just said press on it.
Yeah, same here, basically. You know, there may be a company or something on it, but otherwise, you know, it's free, I guess, for you to, with a black Sharpie, to write whatever you want on it. And I've seen people that do. Mm-hmm. And another thing I want to mention, though, about the badge is that the professionals had just as much of a hard time getting into the show as regular attendees. Because the first day I ran into David Hine, brilliant writer, and he basically had like a meeting inside the convention floor set for a certain time. And the line for professionals to get into the show was like as long as at the time the attendee line. And so basically I had to like get an extra exhibitor badge, swing it over, you know, around his neck, get him onto the show, and then, you know, immediately, you know, he's able to take it off and give it back to me and walk around inside.
Wow.
But I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. What's the problem with these great big huge conventions? It's very difficult to get the flow of things. San Diego, you had little armies running around in little shirts. You know, an army of yellow shirts would walk by, and an army of red shirts would walk by, and an army of blue shirts would walk by. You didn't have that. You had one group, and they wore like these lime green shirts. And I didn't think there were nearly enough of them. If I had one suggestion, it would be to get more volunteers next year. I think that would help.
What was the death count for red shirts?
Red shirts, yeah. Well, the red shirts were out in California, and they were, you know, it was just the funniest thing. It was like watching little armies walk around. You see a bunch of people wearing yellow shirts would walk around, then a bunch of red ones would walk around.
Oh, yeah.
And blue ones they'd walk around together and then sort of split up. It was like having a live action, like a military game or something like that. It was just kind of funny to watch. But anyway, okay, that's enough about the New York Comic Con. Why don't we go ahead and get to news? Ian, have you got any news that you'd like to share first?
I've got a very quick piece of news, actually. It's regarding Strip Magazine. It was meant to come out on the 21st, so it was actually meant to come out on Thursday. But unfortunately, due to a problem with couriers, and the couriers actually getting the book to the stores and whatnot, they've not been able to sort of release the book on time. Mm-hmm. So I should imagine it's probably, you know, I wouldn't want to sort of like put an estimate on when it's going to be out, but I should imagine it'll be out soon. It's just that they've had I got a little email from John Freeman, the editor, and he said that, unfortunately, it saddens us to inform you that the magazine's going to be a little bit late to the comic stores because we've had an issue with our couriers, as in the people that are actually supposed to be supplying the actual books to the stores, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. All right, Gianluca, how about you? What have you got as far as news goes?
Well, there's a few things. You know, announced at New York Comic Con, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips are doing a new series called Fatale for Image Comics. Mm-hmm. They hinted about it at the end of their last criminal book that they were doing like an 11-issue miniseries called that. But they gave no indication that it was not going to be a Marvel book. So this is kind of very interesting news. The reason that... You know, it's funny, too. I kind of put my foot in my mouth by telling people earlier, it's like, oh, Brubaker's so great, but he's never going to
not work for anybody but Marvel. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess because he knows Robert Kirkman for a long time, and they've been wanting to get him to do something for Image for such a long time that he finally decided this is the kind of book we're going to do. So it's crime noir mixed with like elements of H.P. Lovecraft. So it sounds very interesting.
Now, is he going to continue to write Captain America for Marvel, or is he, he's not leaving Marvel? He's just doing this as well.
No, he's just doing this as well, okay. You know, so and then Sean Phillips is going to be drawing 11 issues. So he may be a bit busy on the art side. So,
okay.
In terms of other news, it was announced that Mark Millar and Dave Gibbons are teaming up also for Image Comics for a book called Secret Service.
Ooh.
So that's going to be very interesting. Millar also well known.
It's Miller, by the
way. Yeah, I was going to say it. He's going to kill me already. I don't want you to get killed, too. It's Miller.
I don't care. Yeah, he can punch me in the face. Go ahead. It's got an AR at the end. I'm calling it Millar because I actually do know somebody else named Mark Miller.
Oh. Dude, you know.
Millar.
You know, it's his fault. He spelled his name wrong, okay?
Pardon me?
It's his fault.
Yeah, you guys warned me.
Okay.
Come on, knock the hat off my head, Millar.
Okay. Other news.
Other news. 1821 Comics was at New York Comic Con. They were giving away like posters and stuff for Romeo and Juliet the War, but they didn't actually have a copy of the book, which I thought was disappointing. I thought it was like there was an issue with printers in China, which is why the book did not make it. But they did have Stanley signing these posters at their booth. And then they announced that they're doing a kids imprint line with Stanley as well. So that's going to be interesting news. So they have this book, Romeo and Juliet the War, coming out with Stanley. And then I guess sometime next year they're going to be doing some children's books with some original characters, mm-hmm. like a crocodile that eats vegetables, stuff like that. With Stanley.
Okay.
Other news, IDW announced that in February they're coming out with a book called Road Rage. And it's going to be an interesting kind of, I guess, mini anthology series dealing with car and highway related stories. But Stephen King and his son, Joe Hill, they're going to have a two-parter story called Throttle that's going to be in it. And the first issue, besides having that first half of the story, is also going to have Richard Matheson's Duel story, which was later on adapted into a movie. It was like one of Steven Spielberg's first films. So
it was Spielberg's first film.
Yes. He did like do Night Gallery, I think, before that. He did an episode of from the Night Gallery movie. But yeah, this is like, I guess, his first full-length feature film. But the Richard Matheson story that it's based on is being like adapted to a comic. So
cool.
Big news with DC. They announced that they're doing a series of Watchmen prequels. Mm. Very, very big, exciting news. If you're a fan of the Watchmen, I'm kind of torn on it. Darwin Cook is going to be writing it. He's really brilliant. You know, he's lately been doing the Parker stories for IDW, the crime stories like The Outfit and The Hunter. So he's going to be doing that. And then you're going to have artwork because they're doing it for each character, I guess, is going to have their own prequel book. But you're going to have artists on each one, such as Dave Gibbons, the original Watchmen artist, Andy Kubert, and of course, Darwin Cook is going to be contributing.
Well, not sure about that one, to be honest.
Yeah, same here. You know, you got some brilliant guys involved, but Watchmen, I don't think should have ever be sequelized or prequelized. You know, it's kind of its own perfect story, and you're not even having like the original guy Alan Moore involved in it all either. So.
I don't think Alan Moore would want to be involved with it. You know, he's kind of like backed away from the commercial side of things, hasn't he? Really?
Yeah, he's not too crazy about DC either.
I don't think he's that crazy about Marvel either.
Nobody. I don't think he's crazy about anybody. But anyway, other news that we should know about?
A couple other bits of news. I mentioned it before in the last podcast about how Barnes & Noble was boycotting the 100 DC books that were being offered on the Amazon Kindle. Mm-hmm. By taking them all down off of their shelves. Mm-hmm. Books A Million, another but much smaller book chain, has decided to follow in Marvel's steps and do that as well. While a chain that's bigger than Books A Million but not as big as Barnes & Noble is called Hastings, they really don't care. They're going to keep their DC books up. They really could care less. You know?
Okay.
They don't have a nook to sell.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in the 90s when I was actually coming to and from America a bit, you know, with my late mother, I'd often shop at Barnes & Noble, but most of the time I'd go Books A Million because there was, you know, at this particular branch in Florida, it was like attached to a coffee shop, so it's perfect. You could just get your book, get your cup of coffee and start reading your book.
Yes.
Okay.
And then finally, this is news that Wayne like emailed to us, but Marvel has laid off at least 15 members of their editorial staff. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were speculating maybe Disney had something to do with this, but really it has to do with Marvel's CEO, who's known to be a belt-tightening penny pincher. Mm-hmm. So they're wanting to cut down and be lean and mean, I guess. They lost out. They dropped a number two in the book market for September, possibly even October. So I guess they're trying to run like a much tighter ship because sales in general have been falling overall, with the exception of the new 52. Marvel also announced the cancellation of Iron Man 2.0 with issue number 12 as well.
Yeah, and also Alpha Flight. They just announced that Alpha Flight was going to be an ongoing series, and now, like, 2 months later, they've come back and canceled the book, which is kind of fascinating to me. And I like Alpha Flight, and I enjoy the characters real well, but apparently the sales weren't as high. The thing that fascinates me is that Nick Spencer, who's a really well-known and popular writer in comics these days, he was doing Iron Man 2.0, which was good. It got interrupted by the Fear Itself stuff, kind of cut it into bits. He was telling a story. They had to put that on hold for, like, two or three issues and then get back to the story, and I think it lost a lot of momentum during that time. But Nick, I was surprised. I haven't seen a Nick Spencer book get canceled. You know, Thunder Agents for DC is coming back. They're going to start with a new number one. So I'm not surprised that they kind of gave that a little rest. But with this, I'm very surprised. He's going to be doing a series called Doom about Dr. Doom that's coming up shortly for Marvel. And he's also doing an X book, I believe. And so he's not done with Marvel. But the truth of the matter is, it's very unusual for a Nick Spencer book to get canceled. So that was a real interesting thing when I saw.
Now, there's another bit of news, and this is unrelated to Marvel, but like I said to both you guys, it's kind of depressing that 15 people from that Marvel's editorial staff are getting laid off. You got a feel for these people that are sort of like losing, you know, essentially losing their jobs. Just pretty tough break. Mm-hmm. This other bit of news, we posted it earlier on the week, shortly after Comic-Con at Sci-Fi Pulse, but Vertigo Comics, which is an imprint of DC, they're kind of following suit with 52, as in they're going to be releasing titles on the same day as, you know, on digital format as they do on the paper format as well. So,
you know, someday we're going to have a discussion about that, because digital comics, if I understand, the new 52, the paper comics are moving real well, but the digitals aren't really being spectacular as in terms of sales. And I'm just curious, you know, people are jumping on the bandwagon. While I was at New York, I also talked with Archie Comics. Alex Segura, who used to work at DC and left there, he's over at Archie. And he was talking to me about their superhero line, which they're going to bring back. And it's going to be purely digital online. They're not going to be any paper copies. And I'm just fascinated as we move forward. I want to continue to monitor how digital does. Because from what I've seen so far, digital comics haven't really been a big boon as far as comic companies go. I realize that someday we're probably going to end up in a digital world, but I'm just fascinated to see how long that's going to take, or if we're going to have to take some side turns before we get there.
I think you know, part of the reason is there's no definite platform for digital comics. You can either look at them on your iTunes thingamajig, your iPad or your iPod. But you can't really get them on Kindles like Amazon. And the thing is, the reason why digital books are doing so well is because you've got the Kindle, which is attached to Amazon. And Amazon pretty much have the rights and, you know, the direct sales of most of the books that come out. So it's easy for them to publish to Kindle. Now, really, what needs to happen is some of these comic book companies are smart. They need to get together and release a special device, kind of like a comic book version of a Kindle, whereas people can, you know, read their comics for off of something that's actually endorsed by all of the comic book companies. You know, I think then, you know, if they do something like that, then the digital copies might start to fly out a little bit more, because consumer will have certain, you know, a bit more confidence in the in digital copies.
Okay, well, we need to get into the previews. So I guess, Ian, while you're talking, what's coming out this week that you're looking forward to?
Well, Bionic Man issue 3 came out last week, and quite forward to getting all of that. And is Planet of the Apes coming out this week, John Lucas?
Yeah, number 7.
We'll be number 7, yeah. I'm looking forward to that, and obviously looking forward to Strip when that comes out.
Right. Okay, John Lucas, how about you? Well, what's coming out this week or what's coming that you want to let people know about?
Absolutely. October 26th, just before Halloween, The Vault issue number 3. It's the final issue that goes on sale.
Yay.
I'm really excited about that.
I got to say, I got a chance to read it. I got a copy while I was at New York, and it has a really good ending. I love the ending. So yeah. If people haven't read that book, boy, you really need to be. It's an excellent story.
Yeah, and it's fun. Interesting note of trivia. I think we actually touched on this in the Halloween episode, which is coming up later in the week. But Sean, who does the sound editing, actually lives near to where the vault takes place.
Ooh.
Yes, he does. Cool. He's like walking distance to Sable Island.
So do we see him in the comic? I mean, is he there?
Maybe he gets killed really quickly.
Oh, okay.
We have to check it out.
All right.
On DC side, they have a lot of books out, but what sticks out to me is I, Vampire, number 2 coming out by Joshua Hale-Fiakov. It's really good. I enjoyed the first one, so I'll definitely be picking up number 2. As well as Justice League Dark, written by Peter Milligan. Mm-hmm. So there's still like a bit of setup that was going on with the first issue. They haven't yet been called the new Justice League Dark or anything like that, yet they're all still finding their way towards each other. Mm-hmm. But it is entertaining. I do like the characters involved, like John Constantine, so I'm picking that up. For other publishers, IDW has H.P. Lovecraft, The Dunwich Horror, coming out. Joe R. Lansdale is writing it, and Nick Percival does a variant cover for it. It looks really sick.
Cool.
Not my thing, but IDW has Star Trek Ongoing number 2 on sale. The first one sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can continue on if you're lucky enough to get a first or second printing of it.
Mm-hmm.
On Avatar Press, they have Stitch number 1 by Garth Ennis. This book was also made into a movie. I'm guessing it's a horror movie since it's coinciding all together around Halloween time. It's an Avatar book, so you know there's going to be plenty of blood and guts.
Wow.
Like books like Crossed and Caligula.
Mm-hmm.
Already mentioned, Boom Studios has Planet of the Apes number 7, mm-hmm. and Dynamite has Game of Thrones number 2.
Mm, cool.
As well as second printing of number 1.
There's a book coming out called Steampunk Halloween One Shot that's $350. I don't remember who the company is that's making that.
Probably Antarctic Press.
Antarctic, okay, because that kind of interests me, because as we get closer to Halloween, I'm sure people are going to want to pick up stuff like that. Mr. Nelson suggests 28 Days Later if you want to get some good Halloween horror type stuff. Ian, you had something you want to mention?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Antarctic Press sounds pretty cool, right?
They have some really weird titles. They do a lot of spoofs, and they do a lot of steampunk, like Steampunk Palin. They had a Sarah Palin steampunk, and then they have a calendar of steampunk ladies as well.
Cool.
The new previews.
Was Sarah Palin in that one as well?
I don't know. Your guess is good as mine.
Was she wearing like a balaclava and carrying a big old shotgun?
It was a very sexy cover, I remember. A lot of people wrote about it at the time. They definitely sexualized her in the Steampunk Palin book. But they also have really weird titles, too, like Time Lincoln, about Lincoln going in time and fighting guys like Hitler and such. And they're good for a laugh. Definitely.
Now, all the DC books are going to have number ones are coming out, except for Supergirl. Supergirl number 2 is coming up, but there's no number 1 second printing, which I find interesting. But Blackhawks, Aquaman, Flash, Fury of Firestorm, Green Lantern New Guardians, Voodoo, Teen Titans, and Superman number 2. Superman's going to be taken over by Dan Jurgens, which is a flashback to the past for me. I saw him talk at that New York Comic Con. There's no such thing as a Superman story that doesn't follow a certain pattern, at least a good one. So he's prepared to tell more good Superman stories. I look forward to that. Mr. Perez got things off to a good start, so I'm happy with that. Anything else we should mention before we call this to a close?
Can't think of it.
Okay, that'll do it. All right, we'll be back next week, and we'll talk about more news and previews. Thanks, guys. And that's a wrap for the 32nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to visit the SFP-Now website later in the week so you can listen to the Halloween special, which will be a fun podcast. I didn't get to any reviews this week, but if you'll go to the scifipulse.net, SCIFIPULSE.net website and look for my column, DC Comics and Beyond, What a Great Week, you'll get to see all the books that I reviewed there. And believe me, there were a lot of great ones last week. I'd probably have to do a whole podcast just filling it up with that. So instead, if you want to give that a read, I would encourage it. I'll be back next week with more news, interviews, and previews. But until then, keep reading your comics.
This So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.